thank you for staying with us. We have a great panel of LGBT artists that we wanted to introduce to you now. So here we go. Thomas Allen Harris wanted to send his regrets. He's been doing a lot of press. He's not feeling well, but he definitely wanted me to thank you guys for attending. So send him your regards. I did want to acknowledge Ann Bennett. Is she in the room? Okay. Ann Bennett is a producer on the film. She may show up a little bit later. We do have one of our cameramen here, Anthony Phillips, the LGBT filmmaker. So let me introduce our panel. We have Lola Flash, a photographer and educator. Lola spent, you can come up. Lola spent 10 years in London, where she regularly exhibited her work and attained her MA. A classic flash photograph, State of Flow Use of Rubber, is part of London's Victoria and Albert Museum's permanent collection. Her early work explored notions of color, sexuality, and gender. Her technique relied on the use of cross-color processing in the darkroom, an effect that aided her confrontational and questioning style. In London, Lola embarked on her Surpassing series, inspired by tales of light-skinned black people who would pass for in America's segregation period. She later expanded the notion of passing to include sexuality and gender. Let's give it up for Lola. Ocean Morissette is a Haitian American. Self-taught photographer who specializes in photojournalism and documentary photography, with special emphasis on Black people throughout the diaspora. Driven by his personal work, Ocean engages with a wide range of subjects in life, though his passions remain in telling stories with his images. Since 2005, he's turned his lens on the Black LGBT community, exploring and addressing such topics as youth homelessness, homophobia, and LGBT pride. In the summer of 2011, Ocean was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and turned to photography as therapy, creating a body of intimate self-portraits documenting his journey and exploring his spirit in a series titled Self-Portrait, Seeing Myself as I Face Cancer. Now in remission, Ocean is working on a memoir which tells his story through words and images. Dario Calmis, on a lighter note, photographer. Dario is not very, this is his bio. Dario is not very tall, but he's tall enough. It's fine. He's not terribly short either. Actually, you'd be surprised at the amazing amount of things he can teach without a step stool. That said, Dario currently lives in New York City and tries every day not to think about his grad school loans from the School of Visual Arts. Most days, he succeeds. You should also know that Dario doesn't sleep much, makes Manhattan clam chowder from scratch, and thinks coffee is a vitamin. His current clients include the Plaza Hotel, the CFDA, Public School, Number Lab, Great Aunt, Coach, NYU, and some other people. And our moderator tonight is Dwight Jordan. Dwight has worked at the Apollo Theater as project manager since 2009 and is a staunch LGBT advocate. Let's give it up for our panel.
Hello. I have to tell you, I have so many images and emotions running through my head right now. There was so much going on in this film, and I just want to take a moment to say thank you, Thomas Allen Harris, for making this possible. Mm-hmm. It's a gift to all of us. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, I'd like to ask each of you, I know we saw a lot in this documentary. Exactly what stood out for you? And Lola, I'd like to start with you. What moment was just really resonating with you?
I think every time I see it, I feel something different. Tonight I felt, we're talking so much about the family album, that how much I'm a part of that family album, thinking about Barboza. He was one of the few people I remember learning about when I was in college. And then Penner Hughes, he actually, when I was in college, he lived in my hometown, and he let me come to his studio to look at my portfolio, and I think that was the first time I felt like a real photographer. So I feel like I have a long history with a lot of the people in the film, and I feel really honored to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Wow, so much was in that film. I think what stood out for me, I mean, there were many things, but initially, the notion of secrets and how in the family album, you know, in every family there's secrets, but in family album, the secrets sort of play themselves out in the images. Part of the work that I do and I've committed myself to doing is documenting the Black LGBT community. Since I discovered photography in 2001, I'm pretty much self-taught. Someone just gave me a camera one day and I started taking pictures. I immediately went into the community to start documenting the youth. I remember what it was like growing up as a young, sort of same gender loving man, and so I just wanted to use my talents to document the community in that way, because we talk about secrets, but this is sort of a community that's sort of held in secrecy, if you will. It's not sort of out there. We hear LGBT, we hear gay, we hear transgender, but what we miss is the human aspect. These are people's children, sons, daughters, older brothers, younger brothers, sisters, you know, things like that. And I was just really struck with the absence of, even today, in today's time, the absence of these images that we see. So I've sort of dedicated myself to documenting the human aspect, showing the love, showing that being LGBT and or homeless, you're not defined by your tragedy, but how you triumph in your daily life, your resilience, your struggles, your hope, and things like that.
I agree that, you know, each time I see something different. Something that stood out was when Carrie Mae talked about how, as photographers, we have a responsibility to show different sides of blackness. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, different colors, a range of who we are. And I think that the power of the visual image is so strong. And I think that we as human beings are such refined filters, basically, of what we see visually and what we look at, how we see ourselves, what music we listen to, what images we see of ourselves. It's going to come out in some way. It's going to come out. And I invited a good group of friends here because I felt, after seeing the film the first time, I felt a responsibility. I felt a responsibility to, you know, for my friends who are creative and who are visuals, that there's a pluralism to blackness, and I think that's something that we don't see so much anymore. There's been this kind of commoditized narrowing down of what blackness is. You're black, so you listen to this, you dress like this, you live here, you speak like this, this is your education level, and we all know that's not the case, but it starts with the visual. And so that's really what I took away from the film, is this pluralization that we really need and that we're all responsible for to show.
Thank you. One of the things I'd also like to know, like when I was growing up, being around a camera, anything expensive that could be broken, my family was always like, hey, stay away. Mm-hmm. So when you were growing up, what inspired you, or who inspired you to pick up a camera? Who gave you access to a camera?
My first camera was a little tiny Minox camera. I got it when I was probably 7 or 8. I was an only child, and it was kind of like my friend. So I just took pictures of like my fish tank, and I just really started taking pictures of all kind of bizarre things that kids do. Once I got to high school, I got a proper camera, and all my friends were going to college, so I was like, okay, what am I going to do? So I thought, be a photographer. So that's when, I mean, and part of us also thinking that in order to be a photographer, you know, we're not wealthy, So I knew I would probably have to wait till I went through college and then be, you know, then have it as a hobby. And so I thought I didn't really want to wait, that I really wanted to become a photographer. I didn't really realize, I think at that time, what a powerful tool it is. But I'm glad that my parents were, you know, supportive of me and let me do that. So, you know, it's kind of always been my friend.
I think my relationship with photography early on, growing up, was I was more interested in being in front of the camera than behind it. Actually, my parents had the old Polaroid camera, the sort of 110 kind of camera that kind of did that too. And you know, we took family pictures, family functions, things like that. It wasn't until, you know, 2001 that somebody gave me a camera. I had no aspirations of being a photographer. I didn't think I could be one. I liked photography. I liked art. I went to museums and galleries. And I was like, oh, that's nice and that's cool. But in 2001, when somebody gave me a camera, it was a Canon AE-1 fully manual camera, and they gave it to me, and I don't know what it did. It just was like electricity through my body. It was just like I had this burning need to kind of get out there and shoot images. I built a little dark room in my bathroom. And just started making prints and developing film, and the interest from then just became this love, and so much so to the point now where I photograph. When I photograph is when I feel most myself. It's when I feel most centered, most at peace, most in the essence of who I am at my core. So so my relationship with photography sort of came later in life, and it still continues today, but it's something that I couldn't imagine not doing now.
Access to a camera. I started off as a photographer pretty late, but I think who really inspired me was my grandmother, my paternal step-grandmother. Before I was a photographer, I was a performer, so I was traveling all around and singing and dancing and all that other stuff. And I was on a cruise ship. I was working on a cruise ship. And I bought a digital camera, just a point and shoot. And wherever I went, I would just take pictures of everything, the flowers, the buildings, whatever. And I would take pictures of the signs, like the welcome to, I don't know, Provincetown or something. And I'd take a picture of the sign, stupid stuff. And but it was for my grandmother, because she didn't travel much, and so she got a chance to travel with me. So I was always kind of looking through the eye of my grandmother, like, would she like this? She would probably want to know what the name of this town was, things like that. And then as I got older, I took a trip abroad to Europe, and the first thing I thought was, I need to get a really nice camera for my grandmother, so she can see, you know, the Eiffel Tower, so she can see what the Causalium looks like, all of these things. And so my friend convinced me to buy my first, what I found out was called a DSLR. And I took the owner's manual with me, and I just kind of went around Europe for a while by myself and taught myself how to use this camera, and ended up falling in love with it. I thought I was going to be making like a calendar for my parents for Christmas, and it ended up being like a total career, and I just fell in love with the process. So.
There's a moment in this film that I can't get out of my head. I saw how slaves were freed, and then there's this sense of pride. You knew that slaves were going to excel, move forward. And then comes that film, Birth of a Nation. And you can just hear it even in the documentary, the tone, the dark tone. And then comes, you'll see the lynching come about. And it's a media campaign. And so I can't help but think about how that media campaign has lasted to the generation that we're in right now. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that. What is the responsibility of photographers, of media, today to tell the true story?
Very, very important. I I kind of touched on it when I started earlier, but I just feel that, especially after seeing the film the first time, I feel like if we don't create the images, then there will always be that skewing. It's through somebody else's lens, which is why I think the title of the film is so great, Through a Lens, Darkly Through Our Eyes. I happen to be, my parents, I grew up about 3 miles away from Ferguson. And St. Louis is a very racially charged city, very racially charged. There were like race riots when I was in high school. I think it's really, really tough. I think that it is terribly pervasive, and again, it goes back to the visual. And I think that at the end of the day, we're all a part of it. There are those movers and shakers who have the financial resources to greenlight things that we all just happen to see. But at the end of the day, I think we've all been indoctrinated and conditioned into American culture, and we're just as guilty sometimes. I heard someone say that some of the staunchest upholders of white supremacy are actually black people. And it's true. I think that we are, we're complicit sometimes, and we have to do the work as well as our other counterparts. There's a great responsibility to how we are portrayed in media and on social media.
Yes, I agree. Carla Williams in the film, photographer Carla Williams, who I happen to know also, she mentioned something about we need to it matters who the person is that takes the picture, who the photographer is. And in my case, yes, in terms of the project I'm working on with the black LGBT community, I think that prior to my sort of going out there and shooting the work, and even in works I've seen by other photographers, taken by white photographers of the black LGBT community, I can see a difference. I can see in the portrayal of how it's portrayed. For me, it's sort of like, okay, I'm from this community. I understand. I've been there. And so I need to dispel, my work is to dispel the notion of what it means to the larger society at large as to what it means to be black and LGBT. Too many times I've heard, oh, well, you're black and you're gay, so you have two strikes against you. Well, no, what's the third strike? I mean, what happens next? It's already striking. We're already being lynched in the community. Bullies, high school bullies, teens committing suicides, youth homelessness, people, parents throwing their kids out on the street simply because of who they choose to love, simply because of their sexual orientation. I think that's, it's painful at times, because I know a lot of these kids now, and I go out and shoot them and hear their stories, and one of them said to me just a couple weeks ago, I just want to be. Why can't I just be? And I had no answer. I had no answer, but other than to say, just continue being you, and whatever it is, and however it looks, and I just want to point out also that even within the black LGBT community, there's further oppression, because there's this whole division between masculine and feminine guys. And, we all have spoken about topics of hypermasculinity and how masculinity is portrayed in the media. Somebody posted on Facebook the other day a picture of Shaq. Oh, how come men don't look like this anymore? They define that image, using that image, as the definition of masculinity. And I think that's something so wrong with that. I think we buy into a lot of what we're fed. We eat a lot of that crap. And we digest it, and we accept it as true. My job is to, I know the truth of my community, so I seek to bring that out. Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
Okay. Yeah, I think the same thing that you're saying, that for me it's important to just keep photographing marginalized people and making them as big as possible, as big as the gallery will let me make them, to just make their presence known. Today's first day of school, and I was talking to my kids about just about Ferguson and the images that were first portrayed of Mark Brown and then of Michael Brown, and then later on they started showing pictures of him as a graduate. you know, so just the way that those things can skew what we see in other people. And as, you know, as young kids, I also talk to them about how they dress and how that says something to people, says something to the community. So, you know, what you, how you look, how your physical language is, how your own language is, how that does affect the way that people receive you. So figure out what it is you want to say and, you know, figure out how that looks.
Thank you. Can I open this up to the audience? Gentleman in the back, hat.
Good question. I think that representation is important. I'm a documentary photographer, mostly in photojournalist. Which means I photograph things as they are. A lot of my work takes place on the street, even if it's not, you know, the LGBT community. A lot of what else I do is street photography, just going around town, shooting in the street, capturing people in their essence in the moment, capturing that realism. I think that we all hold a responsibility, especially as image makers, to sort of portray in a proper light the communities, the subject matter that we're dealing with. I think as a photographer, there's nothing more important than the subject. We are the last thing that's up there that needs to be important. The subject matter is. And for me, I work with a lot of homeless youth and document their lives and how they live, how they love, and how they play. So I think the more of us that do it, and the more that I do it, and the more that we can see it, is the more that we accept it as sort of, you know, as something that simply is, without having to label it, without having to judge it, without having to stereotype it or put it in a box. We just have to come around to seeing more images, and this is going to take time. This is, you know, we're just sort of chipping away at the ice, whether it's images of just black folk in general or specific marginalized communities like the LGBT community. We just need to keep creating the work, and that's something that I keep telling myself is my only responsibility as an artist, is to keep creating.
I'm sorry, we have time for just two more questions. I was screening in about 5 minutes.
I'll be brief. It's very funny to me that politicians and others have come forth and called the beheading of two journalists as barbaric and medieval. And it was interesting to me seeing those images now from the 40s and 60s, and even probably as late as the 70s, of black men and women in similar situations. And those images, of course, were taken in order to spread terror, just as these videos and images of beheadings. how using the American experience and the Black American experience can the lens be used to combat terrorism as it is today?
Wow.
I know. That's a tough one. Nana always gets the tough ones. I don't know if I have perhaps the answer. I don't have the answer to a lot of things. But I think what we have to do is just, one, keep taking the images and understand what it is that we're taking images of, and then use the mediums and the media that we have at our disposal. I mean, we're luckily in a place where to get an image across is quite cheap. You don't have to get a newspaper, you don't have to buy a magazine, you have an Instagram account, a Tumblr page,
Facebook,
and, you know, and I think that that's what it's about. It's about being, again, responsible about the images that you create, and then, I mean, I don't know, perhaps targeting, you know, who you send those to, but I think, I mean, that's kind of my solution. I think it's just being very aware. I think there's a lot of irresponsible imagery out there that continues to perpetuate certain ideas and ideals, and that's why I say that I think we're all complicit. I think we're all a part of the problem, and that's was really, again, my takeaway from this movie is the responsibility we have and the power of the image. It's just not about us.
Thank you. Last question, in the hat. Gentleman in the hat.
Hi. I'm trying to make this quick. The thing that I noticed probably most consistently throughout the film was a lot of the conversations surrounding imagery and representation were steeped in respectability, which I think we all know can be a little bit problematic. How important do you think it is for, especially in situations like Ferguson, the people that are most affected, poor Black people, and we have to acknowledge that, you know, we have class structures within our community as well. How important is that they are able to not only be represented to the rest of the nation, but to themselves in different lights, and seeing themselves come out of the situations that they're in, seeing themselves have access to better education and more information about who they really are. And also, are there any steps that any of you guys have taken as artists to sort of help or make that happen?
I can talk too much.
That's a good question. I think there's another aspect of photography that I participated in. As he mentioned, I had cancer in 2011. I did a body of work of self-portraits documenting my journey. I used photography in that sense as full of therapy, because participating in photography gave me a degree of control over everything else I didn't have control of. I mean, getting diagnosis like that, it felt like getting slammed by a train. So you lose all control. However, to answer your question about Ferguson, I think that, and one of the things that I'll be looking into is perhaps going down there and sort of using the photography as a tool of healing in that sense. You know, it could be a self-portrait project. These are things that I've done. I did a project photo workshop in Cuba with Cuban kids self-portraiture and how they see themselves, how they see their communities, and how they see their environments. So something like that, a model like that can take place in Ferguson by having the residents actually fully participate in documenting their own lives and creating their own stories and showing those images and sharing it within the community as a means of upliftment.
Thank you.
Thank you. We want to thank our panel.
Definitely, we need your help in terms of the film. We're going into our second week
here at Film Forum. So please sign our email list outside. You know, send out a blast on Facebook. Our handle on Twitter is DDFRTV. And the hashtag is Through a Lens Darkly. So please help us stay at Film Forum and get the word out. We are also, a lot of folks have come up to us about Ferguson and possibly having a screening, you know, there. So there's a lot of things in the work. But with your help, we can get youth to see the film. We can get more audiences here to see the film and to also have conversations like these. So thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.